Before we begin, let's take a few moments to worship the Supreme One, the Enlightened One, the One who crossed the sea of samsara, the One who spread the wisdom of the Dhamma out to all sentient beings, the Supreme One, the Tathagata. By chanting the Namaskar three times all together and with me. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. So I would like to start today off by talking a bit about what's going to happen on the 10th. So this month, on the 10th, in about a week or so, our monastery will be holding the invitation to the rain retreat. Now, this invitation is one of the most meritorious things. Now, every single week we talk about this, something that's one of the most meritorious things. But I really do mean this, because for those of you who may not know, Haidian monks every year will observe 3 months of rain retreat, where they stay in the monastery and not allowed to leave the gates for more than 6 days. But if they leave, they normally have to come before nightfall. Now, I would like to explain its importance. And why on earth do we do such things? Because, you know, because sometimes what tends to happen is, the more we talk about the pure Dhamma, sometimes we forget about, you know, these so-called festivals or these events and its significance. Because you can ask, well, if everything is cause and effect, why do monks observe these three months of rain retreat? Or you can say, well, you know, if everything is anicca, or everything is dukkha, why do we, you know, have all night long prayer chanting? You see, this is the difference between the Dhamma and the journey. The Dhamma and the journey. These two have to go hand in hand. They have to go hand in hand, like bread and butter. They have to go hand in hand for Nibbana to happen. So the Dhamma is something that we do nothing but to understand. That's what it's for. The Dhamma is there to understand. Not to use, to understand. Now that's very interesting. The Dhamma is not there to be used. Why is that? The Dhamma is used only when the journey is there. So when we talk about, you know, the anicca nature of the world, the dukkha nature of the world, the anatta nature of the world, what we're trying to do is we're trying to understand it. Once you've understood it, then application of it will happen. Only when the journey is taken. This is why the Dhamma and the Pratipadava, the Dhamma and the journey, is the most important, the two key things that take us there. So let me talk about this rain retreat. So for a Haidian monk, they observe 3 months of this so-called vas or rain retreat. And it was there because in the time of the Buddha, you know, in wherever he lived, there used to be 3 months where it was rainy season, where it used to rain morning to night, right? And so in this day and age, we have these, we call it the monsoon season, which is around this time as well. And therefore, you know, the monks would go on alms, you know, traveling, going on pindabhata, traveling from house to house, begging for their meals. Unfortunately, what happens is that, you know, when it starts to rain, animals or insects start to come out from the ground. And when that happens, these monks, when they walk with no intention, will accidentally step on them. You know, chetana hambikwe, right? They have no intention, but, you know, by stepping on it, the insects may die. But then there are other religions. For example, the religion led by Nigantanatha Buddha. And he said, well, Buddha, right? Oh, Buddha, look, when your monks go around begging for alms, or when they walk on these grass, they're stepping on insects. They're stepping on insects. And therefore, you know, they're creating so many, they're destroying the nature, they're destroying all of this, they're killing lives. Stop them. Now the Buddha, out of great compassion, to who? This is the question that is the most important. Out of great compassion to who? Nigantanatha Buddha. No. Out of great compassion to both, or to all, bhikkhu bhikkhuni, upaskas upaskas, devotees, and even Nigantanatha Buddha and his devotees and his followers and themselves, out of great compassion to all of them. Why was that? Yeah, because it's very easy to say, you know, out of great compassion to Nigantanatha Buddha that he did this. But remember, the Buddha doesn't do anything if it doesn't help who? The Buddha will never do anything unless it helps someone attain what? Nirvana. So if the Buddha was to smile, it was to do what? To show someone the path to Nirvana. So everything he does is for Nirvana. So he says, you know, okay, from today forth, in the rainy season, all monks have to reside in a temple, monastery, or so-and-so for 3 months. And he places out rules. Who did it benefit? Who did it benefit? Putting out this rain retreat, who did it benefit? Number one, it benefited the monks, the bhikkhus, bhikkhu bhikkhunis. Because they can no longer go around, you know, preaching the dhamma. Because unlike today, there was no cars. So they had to walk from place to place. Therefore, they couldn't travel far and wide, so people had to come to them. Therefore, they stopped going around, preaching the dhamma, begging for alms. Therefore, they could spend more time doing what? Practicing the path. That's why in the stories, the number of arahants will always increase in these 3 month periods. Number two, it benefits the devotees. Because now they have the time. They come and invite. So on the 10th you'll do this. You'll come and invite the Swaminansa and say, Swaminansa, for the next 3 months, stay in the monastery. We'll provide you with the four requisites. Practice the path and preach us the Dhamma. Practice the path and preach us what you practice for your benefit and for us. And therefore, the devotees also get a benefit. Because why? Now they're providing the Mahasangha with the four requisites. Shelter, arms, robes, and medicines. The four things that the body actually needs. They provide. And when they provide it, what happens is what? They gain immense amount of merits. And by the end of the day, when they get preached the Dhamma, because of all the merits they accumulate, what happens? They understand Dhamma, and they start their journey to Nibbana as well. That's why in the 3 months period, the number of Sotapannas also increase. So who did the Buddha do this for? For Nigantanatha Buddha, right? Because, you know, they're stepping on animals, stepping on these bugs, these insects. We have to stop them from stepping on these insects. Therefore, I now prescribe this rain retreat. He did it for everyone. Remember that. This is one of the most meritorious periods, time periods, these 3 months, where the bhikkhu bhikkhunis, upasaka upasakas, have honed in on this idea that we have to do what? Practice the path. They can no longer go out. And just in case anyone is wondering, if there are monks who are unable to come in the 3 months, they are able to observe what we call pasuvas or later rain retreat, invitation rain retreat, which basically means if they get permission from the monk in charge of the place, they're able to stay 1 month extra outside. Just in case anyone wanted to know. So these are not the Dhamma. As you can see, there was no anicca dukkha anatta in that. But it is filled with what? Anicca dukkha anatta. It doesn't have anicca dukkha anatta in it, but it's filled with it. Because in this time period, because if you look at the, even if you look at the time, if the timeline of the monastery, great things happen in these 3 months. Great things happen in these 3 months. If I remember correctly, the initiation of the Nyayasakachas, the discussions of the doctrine, started in these 3 months. And so much more. So these 3 months is a very significant time. So on the 10th, you're inviting these monks to stay. Stay and observe. Stay and practice. Accumulate as much merits as you possible. Using the merits that you've accumulated, practice the path. Go further and help us as well. So I really wanted to take this time to remind you of this merit, because I believe it's one of the most meritorious. Because you are asking not for anything, but for another person, another mind to continue, to go forth, to take the next step. And we have very lucky Anagarikas who can spend the 2 months, Anagarikas as well, Anagarikas and Anagarikas, who can spend the 2 months very close to the Mahasangha, the monks, the Bhikkhu Bhikkhunis, able to help them when they need to be helped, provide them with the four requisites. I think they're the luckiest. Right? Especially even our Sila Shravikas, Shravikas as well. They're able to stay and live very close with these monks who are practicing the path. Very, extremely lucky. I mean, you know, if we look at our lives, just take a moment to see how lucky we are. How incredibly lucky we are. I had the great fortune of talking with Guru Hamdur and Nayak Hamdur just today. And something that they reminded me is, you know, in this world, how many people are actually, you know, going to, at the very least, going to go and have a life that they are going to be happy about? And how many of those people will, you know, when they pass away, we will be born in the heavens, at the very least? Forget Nibbana. When they were saying this, the first example that came to my head is, you know, a queue or a line of blind men, blind people following one another blindly to achieve, you know, something that they can't see. When one person falls into a hole, so does an entire, you know, lineage. So it has an entire lineage. Now, you can't say, you know, well, the one of the first things that come to you may come to your head is, well, not everyone is a Buddhist. It's not about religion. Because if you look at every other religion, for example, if you took Christianity, you know, if you even took Islam, one of their key pillars in Islam is charity. In Christianity, you know, they say, you know, love thy neighbor as oneself. You know, help one another. However, how many of those people actually listen, open their ears, and do? We live in a time where everyone is very materialistic. They want things. In this day and age, things are the most valuable. More than kindness, things. How can I accumulate more money? Not how can I accumulate more merit. How can I accumulate more money? How can I get a bigger house? Not how can I lend a person a shelter. How can I, eat the biggest, the most expensive meal, then thinking, how can I share my meal with others? We've turned to an era where we're not thinking about other people, rather we're thinking about ourselves. That we don't want to give to another person, instead we want to give as much as we can to ourselves. And so the blind man will lead the next one into the same pits that he fell into. The blind man will lead the next one into the same pits he's fallen into. This is what life is. Come, do this to be happy, do that to be happy. Come and become a millionaire. I mean, children these days, children, adults, everyone, money is on their mind. And that's all they have. How can I get more money? How can I become more rich? And so they pass it down to their predecessors. I tried very hard to be happy, and I tried to get as much money as I possibly can. When I got the small amount of money I got, I was happy. So you do the same. Leading them by falsehood. Showing them a false dream. I mean, it's very funny, right? That you see these repeat in history as well. So, for example, back almost 100, maybe even to this day, people do have, in America they have this so-called American dream, where they have this certain sort of house, where they have a certain sort of life, and they say, if I was to achieve that dream, I will be happy. And so when America went through that Great Depression, where, many, many of them had fallen into debt, what kept them going, what kept them trying as hard as they can to earn the amount of money they possibly could, was that dream. The dream of the American dream. So a father would tell his son, son, have this dream. Have this sort of house and you'll be happy. Have this sort of lifestyle and you'll be happy. And so the son now gets the idea that, okay, to be happy, I need to have this. And the blind man will lead the next one into the same pits he's fallen into. I mean, something that I really, really want all of you to think about. Something that you all have to, Of course, currently we are all living and we are all in the monastery, right? So we're not now, most of us aren't still running after wealth, aren't running after any material gains. I agree. However, something that we all fight towards, something that we all fight for, is this idea of, how can I be different? How can I, be a bit different from another person? We are still not looking for money anymore. We're looking for a difference. Now, we all know, right, and I explain as well where that comes from. But one thing I really want to show you is this idea of comparison. Now, if I was to say, this square, is this square big or small? Now, you can give any answer. There's no right or wrong answer to this. But if you were to give an answer, you'll say, either it's big or small. Compared to the board, it is. But, compared to, this lid, it is big. But then, to be able to say whether something's big or small, there is always something to compare. there is always something that we compare. This square is bigger than this. This square is smaller than this. We always compare. Think about this. We always compare. Whether you live a life as a monastic, whether you live a life as an anagarika or anagarika, sila shravika shravika, sila huesi, sila a devotee, or you know, just a listener, you are always comparing. This is always big, this is bigger than this, this is smaller than this. And one thing that you always have to remember is, comparison is the thief of joy. Comparison is the thief of joy. The moment you compare, the moment the idea of comparing pops into your head, joy runs out of the room. Joy is no longer there. Think about this. Very simple. It is very simple. Most of you today are wearing a patkada. I mean, almost 90% of us. Don't you compare your patkadas in the very smallest way. One patkada has a patch on it. My patkara is clean. Their patkara is it's got a small patch on it. Now, for example, I think our monks and anagarikas are very lucky. We have red patkaras, right? So if there's some sort of dirt, you know, red contrast, you can't see it as much. But for our anagarikas, sila shravikas, you know, you've got white ones or very light ones. Therefore, a small speck of dust, you can see very clearly. But don't you compare. The moment you compare, the moment you think of this idea of comparison, what happens is you think, okay, my one is bigger, my one is smaller. But even though you may still feel a joy or a small bit of joy thinking that, you know, my one is clean. But for that joy to happen, remember, if there's any sort of joy involved, what has to be there beforehand? If any joy is involved, what has to be there beforehand? For every time you have pleasure, you always have to have what? Vexation, pressure. You have to have what? Vexation. So if you feel joy that you have a clean patkara, what does that mean you felt? Vexation. That's why comparison is the thief of joy. Whatever it is, it's comparison that takes it away from you. Now, let's take another example. Something that we can have in our own lives. Don't we compare not just ourselves and another person? So it's not just me and them, but it's also us and them. This is also comparison. Now, I don't want you to think too badly of this. Right? I don't want you to think too badly of this, but I want you to have this in mind. There's always this idea of us and them. And there's always a comparison. We are very good people. They are not as good. They are bad people. We are very meritorious. They aren't as meritorious. We don't have the same opportunities as the anagarikas. Or we don't have the same opportunities as the anagarikas. It's always us and them. So see, comparison can come in many ways. Either can come with you and another person, it could be us and them. Now, the problem with this idea of us and them is that, you know, luckily, very luckily, we are all connected in some sort of way. But in other ways, so, you know, there are many other stories that you can take that, you know, this idea of us and them can create massive rifts, can destroy, you know, places, can destroy people. I think I may have shared the story before, but I want to reshare the story again. Is that I think back in the past, if I remember correctly, it was somewhere in Europe. In a small town, there was, you know, a family of shoemakers. Now, this family used to work together to make shoes. And the small town only had one shoemaking shop. So everyone in this town would go to the shop and buy these shoes. But as time went on, the two children who used to work in the shoe shop, the shoemaker shop, they became older and they took more responsibilities. However, they were two brothers. Now, the thing about siblings is with siblings, you always have what? Rivalry. So one sibling says, well, I'm the owner of the shop. The other sibling says, no, I'm the owner of the shop. And that rift broke the two siblings apart. Now, instead of having one shoe shop, there was two. Now, this feud grew. This small feud grew to the extent that these two shops were now what? Against each other. But remember, anger can never save, it can never extinguish anger. Anger will always grow when anger is present. So then this anger spread. Slowly, the entire town became us and them. Only a certain group of people will be wearing these sort of shoes. Only a certain group of people will be wearing these sort of shoes. Then they would never talk amongst themselves. So, for now we'll say red shoes and blue shoes. Right? The red shoes will never talk with the blue shoes. The blue shoes will never talk with the red shoes. All because of what? Because this idea of us and them. It got, I think, the entire town got to the point where red shoes, people who wore red shoes, will not have any associations, have any business, will never marry anyone with blue shoes. Because of this idea of us and them. Us and them. Now, this us and them is not just there. It's in our lives. We always have this feeling of us and them. You know, we are this group. I mean, this idea of grouping. See, society needs this. I cannot say that we can live without this grouping. No, society needs to be grouped. We have this, right? That's why we have, you know, children, we have teens, we have elderly, we have middle age, and each of them have this us and them. That's okay. But what we have to remember is this us and them is what causes this comparison. We have better things. They have worse things. We have better things. They have worse things. And so there's also this comparison amongst us and them. But also, you compare not just individuals, not just group-wise, but you also compare time-wise. You also compare time-wise. You know, I today morning I had a cup of tea. But the person who made the tea forgot to wash the cup that they used to stir. So the tea tastes like kottamalli. It tastes like coriander. And now, the only reason why you either feel happy or sad is because what you compare with what? Previously, when I had this, this is what it tastes like. Now, it doesn't taste the same. It tastes better or less. I mean, you know, do you know how hard it is to make a tea that satisfies a group of people? The other day, I had the opportunity of trying to make some milk tea. Trust me, I am not the best at milk making it, but I had an opportunity to do it. And something that I found out is, what I like, many other people do not like. What they like, again, some people don't like. So for example, they'll say, you know, next time you should add a bit more tea leaves. I asked the next person, no, it was okay, but you should add a bit more milk. I asked the next person, it was actually very good, but you know, if you added a bit more sugar, you'll be fine. I asked three different people, they give me three different opinions. You asked me, it was okay. So if I was to make something to try to satisfy each and every one of you today, I would have to make, say, 20, 30, 40 batches of tea individually. And asking you individually, how much tea leaves do you want? How many grams of tea leaves? How many milliliters of milk? How many granules of sugar would you require, dear sir or madam? Because you always compare with your past. Now, it's not just the past you compare with. Because you can say, well, the past, you know, it's something that's happened. Sometimes you compare with the future. Do you not? You know, think about it. Why are we upset when something doesn't go our way? Why are we upset when something doesn't go our way? So, you know, let's say you have the chance on the, say, on the rain retreat, right? In the invitation rain retreat, you're the one who has to, you know, give out the flowers. Say, for example, and you target, you know, I'm gonna give all these flowers to everyone there is. So automatically, you've already made a point in the future saying that I have given what? Flowers to everyone. Midway, you finish all your flowers. Now you're disappointed. You're disappointed because of what? Comparison is the thief of joy. You compare yourself to the future. You compare yourself to the future and say, you know, I wanted to go here, but I am not able to. I want to go here, but I'm not able to. You know, I want to become an arahant, but right now, I know, I got angry. Why am I upset? Because I want to be an arahant. I project myself into the future and say, this is who I want to be. This is who I am now. I am not who I want to be. So you also compare with the future. Comparison is the thief of joy. It's incredible to see how much, you know, our minds, every single moment, is comparing. See, even though, you know, we live amongst the best people in this world, your mind still compares. You know, this is why, this is, imagine someone gets appreciated. In the back of our mind, sometimes we feel what? A bit, why wasn't I appreciated? Because why? Comparison, you're comparing. You're comparing with what someone else has got. Like I said, it's a blind man leading the blind into the same pits. I mean, that's what we teach our children as well. We teach our children the exact same thing. I mean, it's not something that we need to teach. Thanks to our ignorance, it's there, you know, inbuilt inside of us. But instead, we also teach it to our children. Putta, you know, you have to be the first in class. You know, improve your handwriting. Simple as improve your handwriting. What are you doing? You're teaching them to do what? Compare. You know, look at your handwriting. No one can read it. But, you know, look at your friend's handwriting. It looks like gems. 모두 갸루하게. Comparison. We've been taught to compare. So individual, group-wise, future, past, we compare every single time. Now, where does this idea of comparison come from? Where does the comparison come from? Why do we want to compare? What purpose is there to compare? Because remember, you know, everything in life, there has to be a reason. Nothing just pops out of the blue. There's always reasons for whatever has happened. So why, oh why, do we have comparison? Where does it come from? Comparison comes from the idea that, you know, me, if I want to be happy, I need to be able to judge where I am. I need to judge at what level have I achieved. So for example, let's say you earn the salary of, say, £50 an hour. Oh, hold up, let's do it. Do it more Sri Lankan. Thousand rupees an hour. Is that good or bad? Is that good or bad? Now, when your mind is trying to always to find a place. Your mind is always trying to find a place. This is my wage. Is it good or bad? So what does our mind do? Excuse me? How much do you earn? Oh, I only earn... $1,500 an hour. Now what do you think? Okay, that means I'm not earning as much. I have to work a bit harder. Find a way to do this. But if they said, you know, I only earn... $7.50 an hour. Now what? You know, actually, I'm very proud of myself. Because why? I earned that more than this person. Because, you know, remember, comparison is there because of jati. Because, you know, you want to place yourself somewhere. Where? Somewhere. At the very least, you know, in just go back to the time when you were in school. Were you a good student? When I asked that question, what's the first thing you do? You're comparing. Yes, I was a good student. Compared to the rest of my classmates, and I was a good student. But if I asked, you know, were you a bad student? Now you're comparing and you say, you know, I wasn't a bad student, or I was a bad student. Now you're comparing. Because you want to place yourself somewhere. Out of all of us in this room, who's the most intelligent? Now we're comparing. I think I'm more intelligent than this person, but less intelligent than that person. And now you're rating yourself, giving yourself a rate, right? Giving yourself a number. Why? Because you want to place yourself somewhere. You belong somewhere. That's the belief that you have. You have the belief that you belong somewhere. I belong here, therefore I must be X, Y, or Z. To find that out, you need to compare. Is this square big or small? Compared to this, it's small. Because we need to compare to put this, to give this an idea, you have to compare. Then the question arises, why do I need a place? Why do I need a place? Because, you know, what is wrong with the square being a square? Why does we have to think of it to be a bigger square or a smaller square? Because even though there was no square to compare with, you automatically already have an idea whether this is big or small. You know, we just have one square. Is a square big or small? You have an idea. That's an actually really, really big square. Compared to what? Compared to one something that your mind makes. So why is that So, I mean, which color is the best? Or, what color should I use to draw my next square? Automatically, you're comparing. Blue, he's used blue already. Black, he's used black already. Red, he's used red already. Maybe, green. Still comparing because it's looking, because you're looking for, a place, something to put it, something to give it some sort of difference. So, the question is, why do you need a place? Why do you need a place? You need to place. Why? It's very simple. Comparison happens because this idea of, being able to place something somewhere. The only reason you have that need is because you have something to place. The only reason you want to compare this square with this square is because you see what? Two separate squares. And you feel not just two separate squares, but these are two completely different squares. One is blue, one is green. One is big, one is small, one is more, I can't see. Well, they're not squares, are they? They're more rectangles. I mean, technically, from my perspective, they look square. So it's for me, it's a square. But for you, it's more. I mean, this looks more of a trapezium. But in this angle, it looks square. I promise you, right? If you don't believe me, you have to come and sit here. So this one is more rectangle than this one, right? In your perspective. Now you are comparing because you see two completely different what? Now the question is, are they different? Are they different? I mean, by the look of it, of course it is. When you look at it, of course it is. But let's take it and break it down. If we were to break this down into its core components, right, what do we have? And break this down, we have. Now we can say, we can no longer say whether one's a square, one is a trapezium, one is a rectangle. We can't say that because they're all now what? Lines. However, now let's take this one step further. Let's break this down further. Well, this was created with this. This was created with this, right? This was created with this. This was created with that. So now can we? Now we can't say about height anymore, because the fundamentals are both pens. Break it further, and we can say, well, the color of green and the color of green, the color of blue, that is both created where? Where are they both created? Outside your eyes, this has no color. Only when they enters your brain and goes through the optic nerve, eye, not optic nerve, optic nerve, and goes to the brain, and the brain sends it to the mind, does the mind say, oh, it's green. Oh, it's blue. Only once it enters the mind does it realize that these two colors. But outside, these two things are exactly the same. They are exactly the same. So this idea of comparison is based or built on this flawed foundation, or almost a building with no foundation. That's why once you start to see it for what it truly is, all you have to do is go, and the building, this massive skyscraper, collapses. Because there's no real idea behind which one is greater than this. Is this bigger or smaller? I mean, no. Don't get me wrong. There is, conventionally, there is a difference. I mean, if we were to take a ruler and measure it out and looked at its perimeter and area, we can say, yeah, these two are different. However, we feel that these are different when they come from the exact same thing. We feel they're different when they come from the exact same thing. So where does this idea of comparison come from? How can we compare? I mean, let's say if I was to rip this leaf into two. Is this two different leaves? Let's rip it a bit more. Is this two different leaves? Two different leaves. Is it two different leaves? Are they two different leaves? No, because they're both connected at the same point. They're made from the same leaf. So if I were to show you two separate ones, are they two separate things? Are these two things from, are these two separate? No, they came from the same thing. If we looked at the fundamentals, they came from the same thing. So if I was to say this one is bigger, this one is smaller, well, fundamentally, they're both the same. You see, this is what we try to do when we look at the world to be anicca. Understand that everything around us is there because of causes. So this idea of comparison can only come due to thanks to what? Thanks to our best, the greatest thing on earth. Ignorance. Because we are ignorant, they're saying that, you know, this and these all things are separate from each other. They are complete separate identities. I mean, you know, this idea of ignorance, giving things separate feelings, can go so far. So something that I talked with some of our monks the other day, is that, you know, in some traditions, they'll give certain things names. So they'll give, you know, this pen will have a certain name, this will have a certain name, because they feel that each and every one of these are separate. Each and every one of these have a separate identity, have a soul. And therefore, you know, this has its own name. I'm going to name this one Greg. I'm going to name this one Bloom. And this one Bag. And they're going to name each and every one of these because they feel these to be separate, to have a separate identity. But in reality, they all come from where? They all come from the same thing. I think one of the best ways to imagine it is imagine having a ball of clay. A massive ball of clay. And I give you parts of this clay and I say, you know, make whatever you want. So one of you makes a massive tree, the other one makes, you know, a monkey, someone makes a tiger, and then we put them into this, we put them on the table. Now we can all see, you know, there's a tree, it's a tiger. Oh, that's a monkey. The monkey is riding the tiger. And you can see that. But if I was to take them all and squish them all together, what do we have? The clay ball. So what's the difference between the tiger and the monkey? The tiger's a carnivore, the monkey's an omnivore. The tree is a self-providing plant. So what is the difference? See, if we were to take everything here apart, break it into its individuals, what do we have? I mean, say, take two separate individual people. Let's take two separate people, right? Let's say, So I hope that the mixer, you can see a very big contrast between these two people. One of them is small and skinny, the other one is big and tall and horizontally blessed. I mean, this looks stupid. How that makes it. Okay. Now, if we have two completely separate people, what is the difference? What is the difference? Let's break them into the three components, right? So every person can be broken into three components. What are the three components? Person one has a body, has a mind, and has defilements. Person two also has what? Body, mind, defilements. Person one has this, person two has this. Is there anything different? Is there anything more that we can say about these two people? It has not a body or mind or defilements. Let's take one more. This is one I have to. Okay. Let's try this. It's a dog, right? It's a good, very good dog. What does a dog have? Huh. So, person one, person two, and my amazing dog all have three things. Three things and no more. A body, a mind, and defilements. So let's start off by talking about which one? Let's start off by talking about body because that's the first one there. So we can see three different bodies here. So we'll actually, A, B, and D. Right. Person A has a very thin, skinny, short body. Person B has a very big, fat body, tall body. And D has four legs and a head and a tail. Body-wise, what you can see is a difference. How different is that difference? How much of it is different? If I was to take, let's say, I could take anything from each of these bodies and then switch them around, and you won't know the difference. For example, there is right here, right, on person A's body, there is an atom of carbon. I secretly cut that carbon out and put it part of the dog. Did the dog become part human? Did the dog become part human? I'm going to take and add this atom of oxygen and put it into person B. Did person B become part dog? All right, let's change animal. Still the same animal. Oh no, still an animal. It's a pig. It looks more like a pig than the dog did, didn't it? Yeah. The drawing becomes better. Let's say Person B has a heart condition. Right, has a heart condition. Right, you know, unfortunately, because of his habits of eating, overeating, he has developed cholesterol, which gave him a heart disease. Right, and therefore he had to get a heart transplant. Person A can donate his heart, can't he? Now, if person A donates his heart to person B, does person B become B-A? Do they change? But let's say now person, let's say, you know, instead of they're getting it from person A, we ask, you know, the pig to donate. The pig donates its heart. There you go. The pig donates its heart to person A, to person B, sorry. Does person B become pig? Do they become part pig? They do not. Because these three things are made from the same clay. Each of these are made from the same atoms. Carbon, oxygen, nitrogen, X, Y, Z. They're made from the same thing. I mean, if you looked at person A and person B, not quite sure with the pig, but, you know, you can find so many similarities with their DNA, because the DNA is what makes us so-called unique. There are so many, you know, similarities. Technically, your DNA is made from four basic, you call them, nucleic acid, A, G, C, T. That's it. That's what makes you. Whether you're A or B, whether you're D, you're made from the same things. But yeah, you feel that I'm person A, or I'm person B, or I'm, you know, I used to be, you know, my previous life, I was D. No, P. I was P. In my previous life, I was P. Now I'm person A. But if you looked at it, the body-wise, these three things are what? The exact same. Made from the same what? Made from the same what? Same clay. It's like you're making clay, and you're making three different bodies here. At the end of the day, you can squish them all together and can take back what? Clay. I mean, person A has to eat food, has to consume food. Person B also has to what? P has to do what? Has to eat food. Person A excretes. Person B excretes. P also what? Excretes. Each and every one of these are working the same way. What's the difference? Why does person B feel to be bigger or smaller when the same things are here? Same clay is here. It's like saying to one, it's like one ball of clay saying to itself, "Oh, I'm so big, or I'm so small." Compared to what? You can't say these three things are separate. These three parts of the body are not separate. You can take apart this person by person, limb by limb, atom by atom, and you will not find a specific atom that is specifically for one person. You will never find a specific atom. So there's not an atom here that just belongs to pigs. There's not an atom here that just belongs to B or A. They all belong to what? Nature. That's why when all three, A, B, and P, were to pass away, what happens? What happens? They dissolve. They melt and disappear into what? Nature. These three things are nature and in different forms. This and this are all nature in different forms. For as long as the causes are there, this will always be like this, but this will always be like this. But when the causes do no longer come together, this and this will go back to be part of nature. Dissolve back into nature. So A, B, and P. Which one is different? Which one is superior? Which one is inferior? Which one is better to have? You know, being skinny is very good. Being fat is very good. Being P is very good. Which one? You can't say. You can't say. So, body is the same. There is nothing different in the body. Now, we'll skip mind for now and go to defilements. This is very interesting. Defilements. Your ignorance is yours, isn't it? You know, it's because of my ignorance am I here, you know, because of my ignorance am I, you know, still not an arahant yet because of my ignorance, right? It's because of ignorance. Because of your defilements, you know, I still have my defilements, therefore that's what makes me, right? You know, at the end of the day, your mind finds something to grab onto, something to hold on to say, and say, this is who I am. Defilements is where it can go. I am my defilements. I am my defilements. Let's say, we switch these two defilements over. Does B now become A, and A become B? Will B start thinking, oh, why am I so tall? And why would A start to think that, why am I so short? You see, defilements is something that doesn't belong to you. Defilements is something that the mind possesses at that moment. For example, when you are giving something, let's say you are giving a dana wholeheartedly, does your defilement of greed start to appear? No, when you're giving a dana, greed is nowhere to be found. If you're giving dana correctly. If you're giving a dana correctly, greed is no longer, you can no longer find it. It's nowhere. But when you are really angry, where's generosity? Where's generosity? Is also where? Nowhere to be found. So defilement is also something that is not yours, doesn't belong to you. It's not who you are instead. It is something that arises that at that moment. According to the environment, according to how much ignorance that the mind possesses, the defilements will vary. But the more you understand the Dhamma, the more your ignorance decreases, the more your defilements will decrease. That's why, you know, they say that, you know, arahants are free from defilements because their mind doesn't have the environment for what? Environment to give rise to defilements. That's why, you know, someone who's an anagami is said to not be able to become angry because they can't. Not that they get angry and they say, I'm not angry. That's not that they get angry and they don't show their anger. Instead, it's impossible for them to be angry. Because angry at what? Angry at who? The Buddha goes to tell Sariputta Maharata Nuvasim, Sariputta, I have a headache, go preach. Do you think Sariputta says, why is he always choosing me? But you know, I'm an arahant, so I'm going to have to pretend. Of course, Lord Buddha, let me go and preach. No, instead, he thinks, okay. If that is what is needed of me, of course. He is incapable of what? He does not have the environment for what? Anger. It's like, you know, you can't have fire come out of anywhere unless there's the environment. So, you know how you have... You know, I think last year and somewhere this year as well, we had massive forest fires. What is a forest fire? A forest fire is when the conditions in a forest is right, then there's a possibility of a fire. When can you ever have, you know, a fire in space? a place where they lack oxygen, how can you have a fire? Unless you have an oxidization agent or whatnot. If there's no oxygen, how can you have fire? You cannot. So it's like, you know, a mind of someone who's an anagami is no longer flammable. Doesn't have the quality of flammable because the conditions aren't there. Instead, anything. So defilements is something that can only arise at that moment. So, you know, this is why, you know, you can't label anyone here. Oh, you know, person B always gets angry. Do they? Tell me one person you know who's always angry. Person A always falls asleep. Do they? Animal P, right? The pig. Always will, you know, roll in mud. Do they? All the time? So even when P is sleeping, does it still roll in mud? No, it's not like that. At that very moment, they will act in some sort of way. So defilements isn't something that belongs to you. I think that's one of the best things. The best things about this, the defilements you own isn't yours. Defilements you own isn't yours. It's also what? Cause and effect. At that very moment, does that defilement arise? Therefore, getting rid of the conditions means defilements will no longer arise. The defilements will no longer arise. So why are you worried? You know, yesterday I got really angry. So what? That was yesterday. Tomorrow, I have to give a speech in front of all my fellow Sita Shravikas. So what? That's tomorrow. The past is the past. The conditions were there and therefore it arose. So let's say yesterday you felt desire. So what? Let's say yesterday you got angry. So what? That was yesterday. What about this moment? Are you angry at this moment? If so, you have the Dhamma. Do you feel desire at this moment? If so, you have the Dhamma. If you feel ego at this moment, you have what? The Dhamma. Yesterday, you know, I shouted at this person. Why did I do that? I'm such an idiot for doing that. So what? That was yesterday. I mean, you can't go back in time and fix it. Why worry about what happened yesterday? You know, maybe they're still angry with me today. Well, we'll find out. Go talk to them. See if they're still angry. If so, well, if that makes you angry, what should you feel? I have to practice the path. I mean, something that you'll find very often, and something that happens to not just myself, but everyone as well, is that some days you have, you know, your good days. Some days you have good days where, you know, you're practicing the path and everyone's being nice to you and, you know, you're taking massive leaps and bounds forward. Some days you have horrible days. You know, there's like no motivation. There's nothing I can do today. You know, everyone is like looking at me weirdly. If that does happen, what should you realize? My mindset is what? Fixed. No, because yesterday I was really happy. Today I feel, you know, there's not enough motivation. I don't really feel it today. What does that mean? It means your mind is what? Cause and effect. Wow. Your mind is what? Cause and effect. Today I was happy. Today I was happy. Yesterday I was sad. Which means my mindset is what? My motivation is what? The feeling I have is what? Cause and effect. See, your own mind is showing you, hey, don't think of me as fixed. I change. But your ignorance says, wait, he changed? That can't be. Fix that. I'm such an unlucky person. No, you're not. You had one or two unlucky events, but then you fix it and you say you're unlucky. There are some people who think, you know, everything I think happens. I knew that was going to happen. Why did that happen? Not because you thought so, because the thought arose and that happened. You make the connection thinking that I'm the one who thought that. Just remember, we are all part of what? Nature. So can't I have the same idea as you? I can't have the same idea as you, but our minds can arise with similar ideas. The mind can arise with similar ideas. That's why sometimes you all may notice this, but sometimes things I talk about in this sermon, Guru Hanru in his Saturday sermon says something very similar. And I went to Guru Hanru one day and said, Guru Hanru, I think yesterday, in your sermon, I talked about this and you said something similar. And he said, well, that's because you are part of nature, I'm part of nature. Well, what's the difference here? Because what? Because, you know, there is no separate, him, her, it, them, they, us, them. These are all specifically ideas that your mind has thanks to ignorance. These are ideas that the mind has thanks to ignorance. Ideas are not yours. You see, those are very, very hard to understand this, right? It's very hard to understand that ideas are not yours. I thought that was going to happen. Of course you thought so. No, the thought arose, but you just claimed it to be yours. So defilement itself is what? Whose defilements? What's the difference between them? Can't person A and B have the same defilements? So who does it belong to, A or B? Can't P have the same defilements as B and A? Could. It's a possibility. Can't P sometimes, have a defilement? Or can A and B have a defilement that P doesn't have? A is a picky eater. P doesn't care what it eats. B doesn't know when to stop. P does. Who knows? Defilement isn't yours. Defilement is also something that you cannot use to separate. That leaves us with the mind. What is different between the mind of A, the mind of B, the mind of C, mind of P? What's the difference? Let's say I show each three, all of these. I show all of these the same fruit. What's the difference between A, B, and P? Each mind will arise seeing. Each mind will arise with Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vinyana. For A and B, we can almost guess, or we can make a very educated guess that's saying that, their Rupa will be similar. For P, we can say maybe they'll be different because of biology. But Vedana, Sanya, Sankar, Vinyana, the process of A, B, and P are exactly the same. The process of RV, SSV, Rupa Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vinyana is exactly the same between you and the pig, between you and the ant on the floor, between you and the dog the birds are chirping on the tree. The same process, the same mind process is the same, is at play here. the same mind process. So, the mind will arise. But we have to remember that, you know, that A, B, and P have different, number one, vipakas, and will also have accumulated different memories as well. So P will never have a memory of eating on a plate with a fork and spoon, whereas A and B might. So their memories will be different. So there, eventually there, their vinyana will come up with different, the end output will be somewhat different. But the process is the what? The process is exactly the same. So whether it's a body, whether it's the mind, or whether it's defilement, it is exactly the same. So where can we compare? What can we compare? What is it that we can compare? The body? Let's compare the body. This one is big, this one is skinny, this one is a pig. But in reality, this, and also this are the same. Does it come back to the mind? The mind, the minding energy. What's the difference between A, B, and P? The minding energy is also what? The same. So, if that is so, how can I, like person A, not like person B, and kill P? How can I do that? If the body, the mind, and defilements cannot be separated, how can I like one person, dislike another, and kill another? How can you do that? This is why, you know, once you understand this, you don't need to observe the precept Panatipata Veramani. Why? Because you don't have the need to hurt, to kill. Because you realize they are all the what? Same. If you understand there's no difference in all of these, how can you go and think, you know what, when everyone is turned around, I'm going to steal this? When you understand there's nothing separate, why do you need to observe? You have no need. Because you automatically instill yourself inside of you. Why, I don't need to observe the precept. So it's not sikkha padang samadhi ami. Instead, paranatipata veramani. I will not hurt the being. I will not I will observe the precept, but I will not steal, because what's the purpose of it? See, if you realize that this doesn't belong to you and this doesn't belong to me, why should I ever think about stealing this? If this... Let's say you are you're next to a river. Would you ever steal a cup of water? No, because you know that, you know, the river water, the river doesn't belong to anyone. So if I need to use the water, what can I do? Take a glass of water. Same thing here. When you realize that nothing is separate here, that nothing belongs to me or you, now why would you go around and steal something from someone? When you know that it doesn't belong to anyone. Therefore, you don't have the stealing mindset. So it's not veramani sikkhapadan samadhyam. It's adinnadana veramani. Etc., etc., etc. But remember, the Dhamma is there to understand, but the Pratipada is there, the journey is there for you to use. Understand, understand and internalize this. The more you internalize this, now you don't need to think about this. Thinking happens. That's why, you know, the more you understand that nothing belongs to me, you don't need to think about, should I steal this or not? Instead, the idea arises in you thinking, what's the point? Instead of thinking, there's a dog there, and I want to, I really want to throw a stone at the dog. Instead of thinking that, once you understand that, the difference between everyone is the same, you, instead of thinking, I want to hurt the dog, instead you think, why? It's just, part of nature. But responsibilities is that if you need the dog to go, you'll find a way to remove it. Whether that's by, not throwing a stone at the dog, but throwing the stone near the dog to scare it, because you don't want it to be, around the place for certain reasons, then you'll do that. See, if you don't have a person, because the mind with ignorance has defilements, and defilements give rise to ego. If you don't have ego, what is the purpose of lying? Because why do you lie? To protect ego. Once you realize that ego is a falsehood, that ego is a lie, why are you trying to protect a ghost? Or your imaginary friend? Why would you try to protect an imaginary person? No, you tell them the truth. Now again, you don't need to say, I will not lie. Instead, I observe the precept to not lie. Instead, I don't need to lie. This is why the five precepts are so important. It's not the Dhamma, but it's a journey. Because only if you observe the five precepts, do you stop yourself from doing the 10 unwholesome deeds. By stopping yourself from doing 10 unwholesome deeds, you're drawing good vipakas. By drawing good vipakas, you're drawing the Dhamma. You're not just drawing the Dhamma, you're drawing the journey as well. That's why the Pratipada is really important. That's why, you have to step out of whatever you believe that you have put yourself into a comfort zone. You have to step out of it. Every single one of us today have made a comfort zone. A place where they say, this is what I like. This is what I want to do. This is who I am. This is the one thing that will stop you from doing whatever you want to do. It is the one thing that will stop you from doing whatever you want to do. Because your comfort zone is the opposite of Pratipada, is the opposite of your journey. If you have a comfort zone, your journey is not, you're not doing the journey. You're not walking on the path. You're not practicing. You see, your comfort zone can vary. You may enjoy, say for example, you enjoy, your teachers say, go and chant Buddha Guna every day. Your comfort zone can actually grow and say, I like doing Buddha Guna every day. So when your teacher says, actually, I will stop today. But, I know, Buddha Guna, it's a very meritorious deed, right? Like, I should continue to do it. Because now you've grown your comfort zone around that as well. I'm someone who normally would, say, sweep this area. So when someone else does it, well, you shouldn't have this feeling of, this is my responsibility. Because already you can grow your comfort zone. Your comfort zone can grow and reach anywhere. Things that you used to hate can become things that you now like. For example, let's say, right, in our monastery, we have everything in one plate, right? In the beginning, it was hard. How am I supposed to eat papaya and rice? The beginning. Now, Now it's the, anything. Papaya, yogurt, curd, anything. But let's say you have to go out somewhere, and they say today you're eating with a plate, right? Having a starter, a main course, dessert, right? Starting with an entree. Can you do that? Or do you feel the need to go, I'd rather just have the main course and have my dessert inside my bowl? Because if so, you have attached yourself. You have spread your comfort zone far and wide and attached yourself to that plate of rice and papaya. That's now your new comfort zone. Something that you used to hate, now you love. And the thing is, you can't even use that to measure how much of the path you've progressed. Trust me when I say this. I know several anagarikas who come to me on the first day and say, how am I supposed to eat, rice and papaya? And second day comes to me and like, actually rice and papaya, it tastes, there's something new to that taste. And they enjoy it. So you can't say, because I practice the path, do I not feel, disgusted? So again, I can't tell you where you've grown your comfort zone. That's something that you can only find out, and especially with a teacher. A teacher who will challenge you, who dares to challenge you. For that to happen, who should you be? Someone who's willing to accept the challenge. Because remember, your teachers are trying to help you to do the best they possibly can for you. So if you show resistance, the teacher will try to push a bit harder. If you show more resistance, maybe the teacher will step back and say, okay, maybe, actually do this. Actually, you might want to do this today. But if you're someone who doesn't show resistance, today you're sleeping on the floor. Okay. I know you can tell that your teacher said, I know it's gonna be very hard for me, but I'll do it. Instead, sleeping on the floor, there's ants and there's dirt and there's this and that, showing resistance, meaning the teacher will be like, okay, my student isn't ready to accept everything I say. Because remember, back in the time of the Buddha, he was willing to go into a river up to his nose because his 7-year-old teacher told him to. If that is how they, back in the past, attained Nibbana, how should we be? Teacher, tell me, I'll do. Tell me this, I'll do. Tell me that, I'll do. My Nibbana is in your hands. Break your comfort zone. Be careful. Your comfort zone can regrow, can expand into places that you don't even notice. Just think about it. So, what you can do is always look at, whenever you see a person, see them as a body and mind defilements. Separate them out. The body, the mind are defilements. See how they work. See how they work. This is the body. This is the body. This is the mind. Look at people and, see them. And when we say about mind, you can't see minds. But you can see the output of minds. Through sankhara. Through actions. Through words. Through physical actions. That's the output of the mind. So see them as they truly are, a body, a mind, and defilements. Separate them out. Don't let any moment go to waste. Because this is right now, what we did was we just talked about the Dhamma. Dhamma, you have to understand. The usage will happen. The more you understand, the usage will happen. That's why, you know, all we can do is try and to put the cords together. Try hitting all the cords together again and again and again and again. Until one day you think, I understand. And just like Neo did in the Matrix, you see the entire Matrix as it is. As long as you're aware. For as long as you see the world as it is. That's all we have to do. Take time and think. So our Anagarikas, Anagarikas, our monks, the Shravikas, Shravikas, are incredibly lucky. I think, you know, the number of sermons we all get is a lot. Right? The number of sermons that we get, and especially, you know, our Siddha Shravikas and Shravikas, and as well as our Anagarikas, Anagarikas and monks, we get like Nyaya discussions every morning. And this is one of the luckiest things that we have. Because we are always trying to understand, put it into our daily lives, using our daily lives to understand these key concepts so they can be used in our lives itself. That's all we have to do. It's not hard, but it's hard. It's not hard, but it's very hard. You're going against the flow of your mind, your normal mind. You're going upstream. Just have to paddle a bit harder. That's all you have to do. Right. Okay. So again, I'd like to remind you that on the 10th, we do have the invitation to the Rain Retreats, if you can. It's something that I would highly advise you all to join. Some of you have a choice, some of you don't have a choice. So those of you who have a choice, I highly advise you. Those of you who don't have a choice, well, you don't have a choice anyway. So you're going to have to be there. But take the opportunity. Take the opportunity. As well as some of our Anagarikas, I think you'll hear this, you'll hear me say this every couple months. Some of our Anagarikas have donned their Pandu clothes, which means another 2 months, we have new monks and an ordination ceremony coming up as well. So you'll hear me say this every 2-3 months, right? I'll be saying, you know, a new batch, a new batch, and a new batch. Because I want to tell you all, because, you know, you're part of the family. Right? So those of you who are in the family, those of you who listen regularly online, they're still part of the family. So they should know that we have a new batch of Pandu Palas Mahatyas, people wearing the Pandu clothes, meaning that they are the next in line to be ordained. So another reminder is that we have our discussions at 12:30. 12:30 here, 12:30 in the library. Again, it's a good chance, it's a very good chance to be able to talk with some of our monks to clarify these things. Because to this day, I do the same thing. After a sermon, I will go to, you know, some monks and just talk with them to explain what I understood and what they understood about what I heard in a sermon or what they heard in a sermon. Because, you know, one ear is one thing, but having a group of people hearing the same thing and understanding similar things. Very, very useful. So we do have that, so please do join that. Let's take a moment to transfer all the merits required by making offerings to the infinite virtues on the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirith, listen Dharma, engaging in various meritorious deeds. Today, so first and foremost, let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of these teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's transfer the merits to the Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down through the generation of a noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend Dhamma. This is all taking one chance of merits we will acquire to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all chief priests or chapters, who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and committed themselves to the betterment of all sentient beings. Let's not forget, among them will be the monks and nuns resident in local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side, through thick and thin, come rain or shine. It's always taking my own trust in my student groups, and Nansi. As well as the other monks resident in the monastery, as well as Anagarikas, Anagarikas attached to the monastery. There's also taking one transfer merits and expressive gratitude to those who made great efforts to disseminate the teaching of the Buddha, be it thereby translating the sermon, sharing them with others, inviting others to join them, may the power of the merits. If any of them have been born in the world of planes, may they redeem themselves and be born in this plane, may by the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain supreme bliss of Nirvana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to transfer merits to that we require to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who for sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha shelter, alms, roads, medicines, as well as those who pass in their acts and their well wishes. May the power of the merits, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain supreme bliss of Nirvana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands and wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employees, and to all those who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in ancient perform. By the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical mental ailments. May they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. There's also a moment transfer merits to devas, brahmas, spirits, demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as numerous gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Sambuddha Sasana. Let's transfer merits to our garden deities who keep a watchful eye of us and keep us out of harm's way. May the power of the merits, may they prosper from divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. There's also a moment transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all that's been friends and family. And acquaintances in this long journey in samsara, let's take a moment and transfer them to all those who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in shape or form. Take a moment and transfer their merits to them. Let's also take a moment and transfer merits to all the members of the armed forces, as well as the police force, who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those who lost life in the war be the friend of her. Rejoice in the merits acquired today. Let's also take a moment and transfer merits to all those who lost their lives in natural calamities, such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, pandemics, reminding ourselves among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this long journey in samsara. May the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and born in this plane. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from our meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let's all resolve, may the power and blessing of all the merits acquired throughout the day, when we bear witness the event of many hundreds of thousands of Arithanwansis, Arathmainwansis in this blessed land. And finally, with the power of all the merits acquired throughout the day, you and I and everyone who made this program a success become an Arithanwansi or Arathmainwansi in this very life in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessing of Chupacham be with you all. Raga ginnen midetnva. Dvesha ginnen midetnva. Moha ginnen midetnva. Nibbana parama sukhayen. Sukita taravetnva. Nibbana parama sukhayen. Sukita taravetnva. Nibbana parama sukhayen sukita taravetnva. Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnvayo. Nibbana parama sukhayen sukita taravetnva. Nibbana parama sukhayen sukita taravetnva. Nibbana parama sukhayen sukita taravetnva. Raga kini niveva. Dvesha ghini niveva. Moha ghini niveva. Nivan sap labeva, Nivan sap labeva. Tunrange, Susyanata Mahagnabalin, Sri Lokasya Satyama, Nibhan Pamasakin, Susyanata.